Hello, college football fans. Welcome to episode 108 of College Football Throwdown. I'm your co-host, Alex Schmitz, and today I'm joined, as always, by my dad, Peter Schmitz.
Hello, Cornhusker fans and college football fans.
Yes, hello. For those who may be listening to this podcast for the first time, we are College Football Throwdown, a father-son duo that does college football talk by college football fans for college football fans. And we are here today to talk about our team, the Nebraska Cornhuskers, their game against Buffalo, as well as the other big games of week two of the national season and what's coming up the following week, as well as a few breaking news coaching changes. So lots to get to today.
Yes, exactly.
Yes.
There's always a lot going on, though, isn't there?
Yeah.
It seems like both on and off the field.
Well, it is. Usually, I feel like when I say, you know, in the previous week, oh, I looked at the games this week, there's not that many big games. Somehow, the college football always finds a way to deliver something exciting.
That's true.
That's what you love about it.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. So we're going to go ahead and do our beverages that we have here for this evening. And
yes, okay.
I am coming back with another Sapporo. This is my last one. So the Japanese beer that I like.
Well, I'm whining around as well because we're preparing to leave here to start heading towards the God's country and Lincoln, Nebraska here. Not this week, but in about a week and a half, we're going to go down to East Lansing on our way out of Michigan and take in the Michigan State Nebraska game, which we just got tickets for today, and then we're heading over to Lincoln for a few weeks to see a couple of home games then. So I'm trying to get rid of my beer plethora that I have right now so I can get organized for the rest of the year.
There you go.
I'm drinking North Peak Brew Pub, another local brewery here in Traverse City, drinking their cherry summer wheat because our summer's coming to a close, so it's time for this one to get cleared out of the fridge.
All right, well
said. It's called Archangel. Yeah, it's called Archangel.
All right, here we go.
And the nice thing about this one is it uses local Traverse City cherries, so I love that distinctive cherry flavor that it has.
Yes.
Better than Samuel Adams.
It's cherry capital of the world for a reason.
That's right, baby. That's right.
All right. Well, that'll be cool. You'll be able to do some College Football Throwdown episodes reporting from the homeland, as it were.
That's right. I will. That's right. And hopefully maybe get Brother AJ if he still comes.
Or if he wants to talk about the games.
That's true. He may be saying, I'm done with this. So
we'll see.
Yeah.
One quick note for our listeners. For next week's podcast, we'll be talking about the Oklahoma-Nebraska game, as well as the other big games of that week. However, I'm traveling next week, so the podcast may be a little later than usual.
In the week.
Yeah, so we'll find time to talk about it here at some point.
Exactly. We'll figure it out.
Yes, we will. All right, so... on the previous podcast, we gave our usual predictions for the Buffalo game, and I was the positive one this time, predicting that we would beat Buffalo in a close game, a high scoring as well, 35-31, and you predicted a loss based on what you had read up about Buffalo of 35-21. And it ended up being a victory, 28-3, quite different from the offensive battle I was thinking it would be. It turned out to be kind of a defensive battle on both sides of the ball. Kind of a game where, once again, like with the Fordham game, we really struggled early. It was like 0-0 by the end of the first quarter. And we did eventually, find some more things that were working on offense. But it was mostly the defense that really kind of bailed us out, as well as the fact that Buffalo missed several field goals when they did get into a scoring range. So that was kind of the main story of the game.
I would agree. And I would throw one caveat in that we had three touchdowns called back. So the reality is that the final score probably if both teams had played a little more error free, might have ended up being something like, you know, maybe 40, 42, 45 to like 13 or something like that, you know, 21, 17, depending on what they might have been able to get done on the Buffalo side of things. But we had three touchdown plays, all really impressive plays, by the way, called back because of a variety of penalties, which we can get into later, as far as the details of those errors. But not a good thing that you had three touchdowns taken off the board. No. That can be disheartening and really crush an offense's, you know, consistency and rhythm.
Right. Well, and to be fair to the reffing staff on this game, I actually think they did a pretty good job overall because they were calling a tight game on both sides. We ended up having 9 penalties for 71 yards, and Buffalo had 10 for 88, some of which were also personal foul penalties for 15 yards. Oh, you know that.
They had devastating penalties. Yes. The timing of their penalties were awful. I mean, obviously so were ours because we had three touchdowns called back, but theirs were equally devastating.
Right. And with ours, the first two, which was the pick play where our guy didn't like put his hands up, you know, didn't sell it right. And then another one, I believe, which was offensive holding on like one of our guys that was coming for Adrian, and Adrian passed the ball to, I believe it was to Betts, and he got like this great catch in the end zone. Those two I understand. The one at the very end of the game on the option where they said it was a forward pass.
That's awful.
Yeah, that one was really bad. And Scott did not hold back on giving the refs his opinion.
Yeah, that's a fact. Yeah, that's right. He even called a timeout just so that he could talk individually with every member of that crew before the next play.
Right. But you may recall there was a play where their quarterback, Buffalo's quarterback, got hit as he was throwing it or just after he was throwing it. And our guy kind of pushed him and he fell down. And in the moment, it looked like it might have been, you know, a late hit, and their sideline was really going crazy. Their coach was going wild. But when you saw the slow-mo replay, it was very clear. It was just kind of a light push. And then their quarterback did a good job selling it. You know, he went
absolutely there. You know, he was acting school.
Yeah, he went to acting school.
He was down there. Yeah, you would have hired him to do one of your films, you know, when you were down at OU.
And then the ref threw the flag late, and I got worried, oh man, this one's going to go against us, isn't it? But then, no, it went against the coach, Buffalo's coach, for a sideline violation.
Right, because he came off the field, and he got too far off the field.
So that showed to me that, you know, this ref staff was, you know, doing a fair job, you know, in general.
Yeah,
you know, they didn't screw us there.
Yeah, that's true. They didn't screw us there, but I'm gonna argue that the pick play call was ticky-tack bullshit. That I'm telling you again, if you went across the landscape of college football, just in this snapshot of this past weekend, and you look at all the pick plays that are going on in college football, it has become a staple of most offenses, particularly the spread type offenses like we run. I mean, that is a everyday thing. And frankly, that pick had nothing to do with the guy being open. You know what I mean? Had no influence on the result of the play. Had that guy not run into that guy at all, the result still would have been our receiver was wide open, because he was wide open because of a error, a shift that they did where they had a broken assignment. And our guy was wide open. And so he would have walked in like he did, even if the pick, quote, quote, had not happened. You know what I mean? So influence on the play, zero. And again, if I can go on a rant, I don't know if it's too soon, but it's, again, an example. This is another example of our coaches not understanding what they're dealing with and being able to teach our guys because of I'm convinced – it's because of how Scott practices. And until we start practicing in a more game-like kind of situation and risk more injuries during practice, which I know is a horrible thing, and, and, you know, that sort of stuff. But we have to practice at full speed, and both offensively and defensively, because our receivers end up being shocked by the physicality and the location of where these picks happen during the game. And I believe that is because during practice, the countless, you know, I mean, they're repping these things tens of times a day, right? And then the game happens, and it just looks very different to those receivers, I think, because they're not practicing properly during the week. Mm-hmm. So there's my little rant. You've got to be able to practice so your players are getting a good look at what they're going to see on Saturday.
Yep, I would agree with that.
There's an old saying that Tom Osborne was a cornerstone of his philosophy, which can't be done today. I mean, this is one of the realities of how our game has changed because rules about practice and how many physical days of contact you can have and all this, because they're trying to minimize, you know, head injuries and things of that nature, the concussion thing. But, you know, all the players from the Osborne era, particularly the later part, would tell you that their practices were so incredibly physical that the game was the easy day. I mean, it just was, right? It was always easier on game day. Unless, you know, except for, ironically, when we played Oklahoma, right? The big game was Oklahoma back then. And, you know, that was maybe one of the exceptions. But usually you were beating on each other and going full go enough during the week that you were ready for whatever came at you on Saturday. I don't think we get that done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, there's, you know, to your point, like, times have changed in that regard, but there still is problems with how Frost is running his practices, even with
absolutely
those
I guarantee
rules.
You Alabama and Nick Saban finds a way for his team to be super physical during the week, and he is practicing his team enough at full go that his players aren't having the surprise that our players seem to have quite regularly,
right?
I know hopefully we'll go into more details here, but I want to jump into one more detail just because I think it bridges well. There was also another weird penalty that Nebraska got, which is, again, this is a coaching thing.
Oh, right.
We had a defensive lineman whose helmet was knocked off. Now, number one, you have to question, why did this guy's helmet come off? Probably because an offensive lineman pushed it off, right? Which means the hands to the face. So if anything, when that helmet's rolling around, that means a referee probably missed a hands to the face call that should have been called on the offensive lineman, but wasn't. But our defensive lineman did not have enough awareness of the circumstance and the rules to understand that once your helmet comes off, the rules state that you cannot continue to play, meaning that you cannot engage physical contact, that sort of stuff. Once your helmet's come off, you have to just kind of, you know, do your best to avoid things and take the rest of the play off. Well, he didn't do that. And ironically, he ran into the play, which they will generally allow. This is not a penalty that's called very often at all.
No.
But it was because he then jumped on the pile. He joined in on the tackle, even though he didn't have a helmet on. And the irony was, he didn't need to do that. If anything, he was pushing the Buffalo offensive player forward. He was giving that guy more yardage. He needed to just back off. And the fact that he didn't know to do that is on the coaches. Another example of our coaches not having our kids prepared, not having them understand the rules and of the game. And this is something that has been a consistent criticism of mine with Coach Frost, is that our team seems to not understand the basics of the game, doesn't understand the rules.
Right.
And that is, you know, that's like Taylor Britt, you know, catching that ball at the end zone and ending up in a safety. I mean, that is a bonehead. High school players shouldn't be making that. You know, that's something you learn in junior high if you're playing football.
Yep. Well,
and you just know it.
Yeah, well, I texted you about that penalty because I was like, wow, I don't think I've ever heard that one called before because it is so obscure. And then similarly, Cam Taylor-Britt in this game had a punt that was short and he ran up to fair catch it. And then one of our guys like ran into him because he was blocking a Buffalo guy and the ball scraped the back of his leg and it ended up in a turnover to favor
And
Buffalo.
now Cam didn't touch that ball,
No.
but as the punt returner, when it's there is usually a call, there's usually a word that the team has, and everybody on that punt return unit knows that phrase, whatever it is, and it's different for every team. But say a word like bingo, and you say bingo, 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 and you scream it at the top of your lungs to let, because there's only a few blockers that are going to be that are prepared to be down near where you are. They're going to be your lead, your wedge blockers on whatever formation they're using for the punt return, right? And those are the guys that need to hear that. Not all 11, just two or three guys. And they need to know that when they hear bingo, they stop with their blocking and start going back upfield to get away from the ball. Okay? That's the word. You just do it, right? And our guys obviously didn't hear it, or there was no, to Cam Taylor did not convey it, whatever the call is. And again, another high school football basic thing that we don't do well.
Yep. I want to switch to some more positive things since we've kind of been ragging on some of the negatives here.
Yes.
On positives for special teams, we were kicking it into the end zone pretty consistently, I noticed,
Yeah.
which is a nice change from
All
the
one
Illinois
time.
game.
Yeah.
And as well, our punter, there were a couple scenarios where he was kind of in that no man's land where you're trying to punt it so it doesn't go in the end zone and stops, like in the 10-yard line. And there was one where he got it like right on the two, and that one worked out well. I think there was a different time where it like bounced on that 2-yard line and went into the end zone, but then this time it just went like straight up and our guy got it, So we've seen some improvement there.
Yep.
Not so good on the field goals, but we're staying positive right now.
Right.
And then on the defensive side of the ball, once again, the fact that we held them to 3 points is impressive. They did miss three field goals, so they were driving the ball, on certain plays, but we always found a way to stop them. They went for on fourth down twice. We stopped them both times. The crowd noise was definitely having an effect on them as they had to call some timeouts or delay of games, over the course of the game. And Luke Reimer had a great game. He had seven solo tackles, nine assists, and one interception that led us to a touchdown. So,
Yeah, I think you got Defensive Player of the Week in
yes,
the Big Ten.
I did see that.
Yes,
So,
that's great.
this was kind of another scenario where our offense was struggling to get momentum going. Aside from those big plays, like you say, where we would have got a touchdown, but we, they got called back for whatever reason on a penalty. But the defense would step up, and stop them. And this was the same Buffalo team we talked about last week that scored 69 points against their previous team, and we were worried about that. I was thinking it was going to be a high scoring game. So they were making plenty of mistakes themselves with their own penalties setting them back. But still, the fact that our defense was able to play that well, I think, is a good sign.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, you can't look at what they were able to do in terms of the stats overall were good for our defense. And when you can keep a team to scoring only 3 points in modern football, that's a good day, right, for a defense. But I would say that the challenge we're going to have, not only particularly this week, obviously, but going forward throughout the rest of our games is, we've got to find a way to be a little tougher against that running game. These guys were committed to running the football. They fired off the ball. Buffalo was a good football team and probably will do okay this year. I don't know that they're going to win the MAC or anything, but they'll be in the mix. I think they're good enough to be in the mix.
Well, a funny thing.
They were not intimidated at all.
A funny thing, though, actually, if you look at the stats, we actually did kind of force them. And part of it was because they were behind in the game, I suppose, later on. But we did force them to pass it because they ran it 33 times for only 135 yards, whereas they passed it 50 times for 224 yards.
Right. But if you look at the number of times where, you know, third and three, third and four, third and five, and they would convert, just ridiculous that their third down conversion was too good. You know, a defense that's dominating would have been able to, you know, when you get a third and seven, you should be able to get those guys off the field. If you really are in control of the game, and we weren't able to do that. It's just like, yeah. It was so frustrating.
They were 11 of 22. And I would agree with you. I was noticing that more in the passing game, though, and that it would be like third and 10, and then they'd throw an 11-yard pass and just barely get a first down.
You're right. That seemed to happen a lot. There were some passes. There were some passes, but they were also, you know, just getting more yards in the running game than I wanted them to get. You know, so that we could keep them behind the chain, so to speak, behind schedule, so that we could get them into a third and long. And we struggled to, when we would do that, then we'd let them off the hook with a pass completion. So they marched it up and down the field on us, really. Between the 20s, man, they were moving that football. But we did stiffen up a lot when they would get in close. Mm-hmm. And they had some untimely penalties that helped us in that regard.
Yep. Well, and also we're looking at red zone and scoring. They were only in the red zone twice, and they only scored on that once, one of those being their field goal that
field
they actually
goal.
Made.
Right.
We were 2 of 4 in that stat,
right.
Also because of missed field goals.
Right. Yeah. And that's, yeah.
We were similar early on, honestly, like where we would get a good drive, but they would stop us deep. And then we would bring out our Connor Culp to kick it, and he was just having a really bad day.
He was, and you could, I mean, his frustration was demonstrative. I mean, he was grabbing his helmet and just could not believe he was missing this stuff. And, you know, Scott has continued to stand behind, you know, Connor and said, you know, he's a good kicker. He's a good player. And we just don't want to let this get in his head kind of thing. So he's trying to be supportive. But at this point, I think we're a little bit beyond that. At this point, I think you need to use the tough love approach with him and say, hey, you know, this is and hopefully he is in practice. You know, what he says to the media and what he's saying to the individual players, two different things. And so hopefully he's putting the screws to Connor a little bit to say, hey, I don't care that you're, you know, the returning all Big Ten field goal kicker, you know, forget about that. That's all out the window. You ain't getting any of that shit this year, right? Don't worry about it. I feel like he has to have that conversation with Connor, with a number of guys, Connor Culp, Taylor Britt, you know, a number of players need to have their coaches or their head coach tell them, listen, you guys have got to stop worrying about making big plays and all these grandiose visions you might have had for this season, and just recognize that your job is to figure out how to do your job. You know, Taylor Britt tried to jump a few routes on Saturday that if he had just played defense the way he's taught, we would have stopped a couple of one of them particularly. We had him backed up, near their goalpost. Yeah. And he would have easily been able to just, even if he hadn't knocked the ball down, if he had just played that defender properly, which is the way he's taught, he would have made the tackle right as the guy caught it, and he would have been short of a first down, and we would have made them punt inside their own 20. But instead, he thought he was going to go for the, you know, star-studded interception play or whatever, and he jumped the route, and he mistimed it, and the guy catches it, and now the guy is running free and gets, you know, 15, 20 yards and they're out of the hole. And that's him trying to improve his stock for an NFL bid next year. And he needs to understand, listen, you've made enough mistakes, all that impressing the scouts with your regular season shit. that's out the window. Just wait till the opportunities present themselves and seize on them when they're there. But right. he's just trying too hard. He's trying to do too much.
Right. And yeah, it is frustrating with Connor Culp because, like you say, he was a great kicker for us last year. You know, not like an Alex Henry type where he was a real like star kind of
boomer,
but,
right?
Right, not that type, but a solid, consistent kicker. You know, which is what you want to have on a football team. So I feel like it's a mental thing for him. You know, and I know that, yeah. like you say, kickers can definitely get in their own head for sure. Yeah. So
and now we're going up in a game in which. If we hope to stay close in this coming game, that kicker is going to be critical.
That's true. It should be noted one other factor on the day was that it was a record heat day at Memorial Stadium on game day. It was over 100 degrees down on the bottom, you know, at the field level.
Actually, they have some kind of a, you know, system where they're able to actually measure the temperature on the field surface. And it was 130.
Yep. They did say that. So, yeah. That's
crazy.
That was a factor, you know, and I was worried when I saw that, oh, man, like our guys are going to wilt later, you know, but they didn't, you know, they did a good job of like keeping them cool. I saw they had their whole own, area to help cool down the players. And we also, it was, of course, the 20th anniversary of 9/11. So we had a special tunnel walk. Like we did 20 years ago, which was cool to see. And we had these special uniforms for the occasion, which I quite liked the design of.
I did too.
Yeah. They had that old school numbering on them.
Yep. They had old school numbering, which I like. We've used something similar to that. I don't know if those are the same jerseys, but I know we've had a jersey that had that font, if you will, for the numbers before. And then the helmet itself was also old school. With the NU on it instead of just the red N that we've known since, you know, the 70s.
Right.
So those went back to the early 70s or 60s even.
Yep. And last thing we'll talk about here is the offense, which we haven't spent much time on. Once again, if you look at the stats, you know, they are kind of impressive in that we had 516 total yards, 220 rushing, 296 passing. Martinez had 112 yards on the ground because he got a big run for a touchdown at one point in the game. Yep.
It wasn't a touchdown, but it was a 71-yard run.
Yeah.
And he got almost a touchdown right into the within the five.
You're right. But once again, you know, that just goes to show that, like, you know, just forgetting the penalties that could have been touchdowns. You know, we had 9 points in field goals that we just left on the table because Connor missed them.
Exactly.
So, you know, and then there's that, you know, touchdown right at the end of the game that we should have had. So, you know, that was definitely frustrating. The fact that our offensive line was getting eaten up by their defensive line. Like Martinez was having to throw early or try to scramble in a lot of scenarios. And that has me very worried for when we get up against Big Ten defenses this season.
And this coming week's opponent as well.
But that's a given. Like I've already accepted that we're going to lose that game. one thing that we haven't talked about in past podcasts, I believe that I have liked this season on the few occasions we've run it is the option. Martinez seems to have a pretty good knack for holding on to that ball until the last second and then pitching it. Which is what you want to have for that option style. We've only run it a couple times, but it seems like pretty much every time we've gotten positive gain off of it.
Right. No, you're right. He's done all right with that. And actually, you know, other than the fact that he still goes through his passing progressions too slowly, you know, I would say that Adrian has played pretty well. You know what I mean? Like he's managing the offense. He's getting everybody going in the right direction. We, you know, cross your fingers. We've done a pretty decent job with not having a ton of false starts. And maybe a good mention to Cam,
Taylor
our center.
Oh, no.
Our center.
Juergens.
Cam Juergens, yes. That he has snapped the ball better this year. It's still an occasional one or two a game, but that's pretty typical. I mean, you watch again any football team that's you know doing you know 70 plays during a game, a couple of those snaps aren't going to be perfect. But but we're not having the atrocious ones that he used to do. So Cam has definitely improved significantly in that area.
Yes, for sure. Yeah, the one exception was that one that was devastating in the Illinois game. We were making that drive. But besides that, it's been good on that front. One thing that was nice to see was that we got to see some talent that we hadn't seen as much of on the field. Xavier Betts being a highlight. He had a really nice juke move, I remember, that got him some extra yards. But unfortunately, he got injured, as well as Austin Allen. Have you heard anything more on their injuries?
Yes. Well, let's go through that because there's a few more, too. So, you know, you have Austin Allen and Betts, but you also have Omar Manning didn't even play because he got hurt and he was seen walking around in a boot. So I don't know how long he's going to be out. Let's see here. There's actually Hickman, who was a tight end who came in and played well for us. Mm-hmm. Chris Hickman, I think his name is. And he's a guy who's kind of a tweener. He's 6'5", but he's only like 215, 220 pounds. So he's just not big enough to be, you know, an on the line of scrimmage tight end, even though that's the position that we have him at, you know, on the roster. The fact is he's not really equipped to be a traditional tight end for us, but he's got great hands and he's athletic. And so he did some good things, but he also got injured during the game. He continued to play. The Austin Allen injury, I'm very concerned about because I believe it's concussion. I suspect he's in concussion protocol. And and it was funny because, you know, during the broadcast, they said, oh, he turned his ankle. And that's what the claim was. And that's what they told the sideline reporter. But he hit his head. I mean, if you watch the play, he was falling backwards and his head slammed on the turf. So I have a feeling that he's probably got himself a concussion. And so I would not expect him back for the Oklahoma game.
Yeah. I know that Caleb Tanner also went down twice in the game, but it didn't seem like a particularly, you know, grievous injury. So I'm hoping he's all right. Right.
Well, and I think it's going to be it's a nagging injury is what I get. So I think we're going to see Cam. We're going to see him on the ground like that, you know, probably in future games as well, where he has to be helped off the field because he's got this problem. And I don't know exactly what it is, but they seem to think that he can play with it. But as soon as it gets tweaked or whatever, then it hurts like hell and he just needs some time. And so then they have to get him off the field and then he can come back in the next series and play until he tweaks it again.
Right, which is
I've gone through that.
Yeah, not a great sustainable scenario, but hey.
No, it isn't. But when you get there, I mean, I experienced that with a pinched nerve and in my back one season where I just had to accept that I had stingers in my shoulders and you know, a turf toe that once you have an injury like that, you just kind of play with it. But then when it lights up on you, man, it hurts like heck. And you might have to go out for a few plays, but then you're right back in. You know, my whole side of my shoulder, my whole side of my body would just go numb. And I'm like dragging my arm off the field. and then you know, 3 minutes later, the pain, the sense comes back and you go back out there and play. And that's the kind of nagging injuries that a lot of these guys end up with by the end of a season.
Yeah. Yeah. Both teams had a lot of injuries. Part of that was no doubt due to the extreme heat, you know, people cramping up and things like that. But they got, you know, both Illinois and Buffalo, you know, these teams that we've played have gotten beat up while playing us. So that gives me signs that our guys are playing physical. You know, there were still a few missed tackles, you know, or like where they went for the leg because they didn't quite get a guy. But in general, that is something I've definitely seen improvement on compared to like 2 years ago.
Oh, yeah, I would totally agree. I think our defense has tackled well. I think we've generally been in position that we're supposed to be in, although there's obviously some gap assignment issues that we still have, but it's not as pervasive as it's been. in some previous years with Scott Frost and his staff. But offensively, our offensive line is a merry-go-round. It's a mess.
Yeah.
And we need those guys to stop thinking, and they need to start playing, and they need to start playing now. Because if they play like they did on Saturday against Oklahoma's defensive line, it's going to be name the score time. And we'll be lucky if Adrian survives the day.
Yeah. It could get ugly, that's for sure. So transitioning off of the game, one quick note on the national news side of things. There are actually two pieces that will flow into each other nicely. One is that the four teams that we talked about on the previous podcast that were rumored to be going to the Big 12 have received their invitations or extended them to the Big 12. And that is Cincinnati, BYU, Houston, and UCF. And the rumor I saw was that they're, I guess, aiming for 2023 as their year to officially begin.
Right. Well, and every time, you know, they say those things, because that's what you have to say based on contracts, right? Usually contracts associated with the conferences that those institutions are currently a part of. But oftentimes there will be ongoing negotiations that will happen between now and then that might very well pull that forward a year or even two. You know, that's just like the Texas and Oklahoma departure from the Big 12 to the SEC. I wouldn't be shocked if that ends up all kind of materializing sooner.
Oh, yeah. There's no way they're waiting until 2025 for Texas and Oklahoma.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
So I think there's some things there that are going to have to be played out in a negotiation behind closed doors, and then they'll come out and say, well, this is what we're really going to do.
Right.
But you know, honestly, again, as I look at that, what the Big 12 did, frankly, they have done it again. They have found a way to survive, right? That I think adding those four teams, probably four of maybe a handful of others, teams that they could have gotten that would have made sense and bring enough panache in terms of their success on the field, as well as, you know, fan base and eyeballs to make it worthwhile. And the other great thing about it for the Big 12 is, I mean, you bringing in UCF, which, by the way, is one of the biggest universities in Florida now. I mean, it's huge. It's twice the size of Nebraska.
Right.
Their student population is, I think, 65,000, 70,000 students. They're a huge school.
Wow.
And so they have a huge, a growing alumni base, growing fan base, and they bring access to Florida, right? They're a Florida school now that is part of the Big 12. So, you know, a Florida kid can now play at UCF in the Big 12, right? So a Florida kid can stay home, so to speak, and still be a member of the Big 12.
Yep.
Or they can go to one of the other Big 12 institutions knowing that they're going to come back and play, you know, back in Florida, back in front of the home crowd, you know, with some frequency. So that's a big deal for them. And BYU is a national brand, you know, obviously, you know, associated much like Notre Dame. It is the national University of the, you know, Mormon church, and so you're going to have a huge fan base that follows that program. So really, really good choices, I think.
Oh yeah,
that they made
from what's available. I think they made good choices. Yeah. I'm still waiting to see if there's any more movement of the, you know, eight, or I guess it was
eight
teams that were remaining after Texas, Oklahoma left, because, you know, I definitely think like the Big Ten is looking to expand now to counteract the SEC. Cause if they just do nothing, the SEC's power is going to be so great. You know, I feel like they have to do something. And I know that there's this alliance now between the ACC, the Pac-12, and the Big Ten. But as we talked about on a previous podcast, that might not be worth the paper it's signed on, you know, in a year from now.
Exactly.
So we'll have to see.
I agree. I don't know that that's going to do much for us. So yeah. I would agree with you. And yeah, that would be the concern that the Big 12 still has to have is that, yeah, they brought in the best choices available, but it still got kind of a ceiling on how much they could likely demand from a television contract. And so it'll be interesting to see what happens. I think it's a great move by those institutions, though. I think, you know, Cincinnati and UCF and probably to a lesser extent BYU. BYU is the only one that probably could have waited around and might have potentially gotten the invite into the Pac-12, for example, at some point. So they're the only ones that maybe had some other options. The other three schools, I'm trying to think of who the fourth one is, and it's escaping me now. It's UCF, Cincinnati, BYU,
Houston.
Okay. And Houston, that's Houston was an old Southwest Conference school. So they're kind of rejoining, some old foes like Baylor, and Texas Tech and, you know, some old Southwest Conference schools that they played with. So that makes some natural ties and sense as well.
Yeah. The other big piece of news that actually just dropped today as recording this Monday is about USC, because they played against Stanford this past weekend and got beat 42-28. And frankly, that score doesn't show how dominant it was from my looking at the highlights, because it was like 42-13, I think, in the fourth quarter.
Correct.
So it was a rough loss. They did not
look good. Oh, and it was a physical beating, too.
Yes. And then today, Monday, it was announced that Clay Helton has been let go from USC. Their cornerbacks coach, Dante Williams, is going to be the interim head coach. And, it's been kind of like writing on the wall for Clay Helton for a while now. He was 46-24 entering his seventh year at USC. He got a good start. You know, he went to the Rose Bowl, I believe, in his first two seasons, or at least once in those first two seasons. But since then has struggled. But I was still surprised to see USC acting so kind of spur of the moment, you know, in the second game of the year.
Yeah, I agree. I find the timing to be a little bit odd. I'm wondering if they have already been in conversations with someone and they have somebody already, you know, lined up. You know what I mean? Some yeah. coach that they've targeted that will be announced maybe not until the end of the season, but they already have some of their homework done. I don't know, because it just seems like if you because now you've got, I mean, you are now lame duck. And what's going to be interesting to see is, depending on who this guy is that they choose, they need a home run hire, and they're going to need to have him pretty quick after the season's over, because with the ability to transfer now being made so easy, right. They are going to be the first major team to go through this in an era where everybody can take off. And so the question is, what kind of exodus are you going to have from that USC roster, depending on who the new coach is? If they get a wow hire, then that guy might be able to come in and hold that ship together. But if they get a guy that kind of falls in under the radar and is not an overwhelming wow hire, I could see a bunch of their talent deciding to use their free opportunity to transfer and do it.
Right.
Right. And just devastate that team.
The thing I saw before this podcast, and I think it was just some reporter on Twitter, so take it with a grain of salt here, but what he said was that Luke Fickle is their first choice, and apparently Bob Stoops is second choice.
Well, those would be two great choices. Luke Fickle's at Cincinnati still, or is he, did he leave Cincinnati and go to the NFL or something? I don't know where Luke is. If Luke is still at Cincinnati, that would be a great choice regardless of where he is. But that's interesting, given Cincinnati has just emerged as a more significant program and has now gotten themselves invited into the Big 12 only to lose their guy.
Right. You know? Yep. He is currently at Cincinnati. You are correct.
Okay. Okay. So that would kind of suck for Cincinnati. But that would probably be a pretty darn good hire for them. The only question I would have about Luke is, will Luke be able to recruit the West Coast? You know, I think Luke is a guy that's been a Big Ten guy, Big Ten area guy. I don't know if he has some ties out West that would allow him to, you know, hit the ground running with recruiting.
Mm-hmm.
I know he's a good coach. The question is, can he recruit?
What was it? I saw some comments saying that Urban Meyer, you know, it was just something of, you know, pretending to be him. And he's like, oh, sorry, guys, I got to step away from the analysis desk today. You know, because USC is one of those prominent, high paying jobs that could entice him back.
Well, if Meyer was available, that would have been one that he would have seriously considered. But since he's in the NFL now, obviously he's going to stay there until he gets fired. But
right.
We'll see.
Yeah. Going into the games from week two, which we'll go through here briefly, we did predict the big game, which was Ohio State, Oregon. I predicted that the Ohio State would win 41-31. You predicted a higher scoring victory of 49-21, but it actually ended up being an Oregon victory of 35-28 in Ohio as well. So
I know. And I'm totally shocked by this result. I really am. And I watched a good bit of that game, actually, because it was the primary game of the day. And I was amazed, and I mean really amazed, because Ryan Day and his staff have been so good, Alex, up until now. But their unwillingness to change up their defensive approach when Oregon was having success was a bit of a head-scratcher to me. I mean, Oregon had figured out on film, that they could basically clear out, the Ohio State defense with some, formations and some motion, and basically get a numbers advantage inside, and they were able to run the football effectively with that approach, because Ohio State refused to break away from their man-to-man approach. They needed to go to a zone and shore up that run defense enough or long enough to kind of get control of the game, and then they might have been able to go back to a little bit more, at least mix it up. But it just seemed like they were in man a lot, and Oregon, every time they saw that, if they saw that, they would just keep going to the same series of plays, and they were all working.
Mm-hmm. And I watched the highlights from the game, and from what I saw, Ohio State was driving it in the fourth quarter with, 5 minutes left on the clock or something like that. Mm-hmm. And then there, I think it was the only interception of the game. Of course, the quarterback throws it right as they're on this important drive, and that was basically the end right there. But, you know, they were in the position to tie it up.
Right. No, I know.
Yeah. So, good for Oregon. You know, they definitely looked very physical, and showing off their athleticism and all that. It was just kind of funny to watch it. Like, they were doing that play where they throw it laterally to like the sidelines, to a receiver, and then have him run along the sideline, which is a play I kind of hate that Frost runs. So it was kind of funny seeing, some of our plays reflected in them, because of course that's where Scott was under Chip Kelly. But this is the first home loss in Ryan Day's career at OSU.
Right. I know. That's the thing. It's a bit of a head scratcher. It just seemed like they were unwilling to make an adjustment. They must have kept seeing enough to say, no, we don't need to change it. We just need our guys to execute what we're asking them to do better. And they just never quite got it done. The sad news is that I think this will be very valuable for Ohio State, and I think that they will probably be a better team as a result of this loss, but it might be enough of a loss to keep them out of any legitimate conversation about the college football playoff again, and I hope not, because I don't want the Big Ten to be shut out again, but I feel like Ohio State's one of the only flag bearers we have that's got a legitimate shot at getting in that mix,
I mean, if Oregon goes on to win the Pac-12 And
that would help.
And OSU, you know, has a good season from here on out. You know, they don't lose again. You know, then I think they're easily still in the conversation.
I would agree. I would agree. And I do expect Oregon to do well. Oregon's coach is a phenomenal recruiter. He's a good coach, but an absolutely incredible recruiter. And he has been stockpiling talent for a while. It hasn't necessarily been translating in previous years, although they were expected to be the they were the best team in the Pac-12 last year, and then kind of got upset and ended up not being the Pac-12 champions. But they're going to be a factor for many years to come because of USC's struggles. Although Chip Kelly's starting to get it back together at UCLA, so we'll see what UCLA does. But you know, Washington now. I don't know if you were going to talk about that game, but that was another big game from last weekend, and now they're facing 0-2 at this point. They're really in an uphill battle.
Mm-hmm. Yep, they lost to Michigan 31-10, which is a game we had mentioned a little bit last week.
Yeah, that was a dominant win by Michigan. Michigan's got some young talent that's starting to emerge, and I just loved how aggressive they were. I mean, that offensive line and those running backs, they're hitting those holes hard and full speed, man. They are attacking. So I was favorably impressed with the Wolverines.
Yeah, I think I saw some comment in the press from Jim Harbaugh talking about like we don't travel by air, we travel by land or something like that, alluding to the fact that, you know, why aren't you passing the ball more, you know, while we're having success running it. Something like that.
That's interesting that he would say that. I think it's pretty clear what they've got their identity now. See, that's one of the things that they've been struggling with in recent years. That's one of the things we've struggled with at Nebraska for a number of years now, is to really have an identity that, you know, you can hang your hat on. And I think Michigan now has embraced that that's what they're going to do. Not that they won't throw the football or that they don't have good receivers, because they do. And their quarterback is a stud, their freshman, who's the backup right now, but is their future, is got an incredible arm. So I don't think we're going to see them become, you know, Bo Schembechler's 3 yards in a cloud of dust anytime soon. But they're certainly committed to the run to a higher degree than they have been in a long time.
Yep. And then this one made me happy as a former member of the Big 12, was Arkansas versus Texas, where Arkansas won 40-21 in a game where Texas made a lot of mistakes and just kind of got physically beat up once again. Those who watched the SEC shorts on YouTube, I saw they had a really funny one today with Texas and Arkansas, like Texas all beat up, like trying to get out of the SEC deal. it was pretty good.
Well, you know what? It is. I think we might have talked about this a few weeks ago when we were talking about that Texas and Oklahoma thing. And the one big risk that those two schools have is, you know, those two were the year in and year out, traditionally, the big kahunas of the Big 12. And they're now going into a league where, you know, even in Arkansas, okay, which, let's be honest, over the last decade, haven't really been much of a factor in the SEC, even in Arkansas can put a whooping on you, okay, because they're loaded with talent and resources and everything at the SEC, right, because they're an SEC school. Mm-hmm. And Texas is going to find, and Oklahoma are both going to find it a lot tougher sledding in that SEC schedule once they are injected into that. And the tendency is that when you get a new property like that, bringing that in, just like they did to Nebraska, they load you up with the big boys so that two things happen. Number one, they're taking full advantage of this new part of their inventory that they've got, right, from a television revenue standpoint. And secondly, they kind of want to welcome them to the league by saying, welcome to the SEC. You're no longer in the Big 12, fellas. Right. And I think Texas, particularly given their recent, decade of struggles, are going to find it really tough in that transition to the SEC.
Mm-hmm. Well, and frankly, with Clay Helton getting fired, you know, Tom Herman has also been on that kind of hot seat for a while now. So he might want to watch out.
You're right. You're absolutely right. I think the Texas alums will be clamoring if Texas doesn't turn it around, which they still could, obviously. So.
Of course. And then the last game I want to talk about from this week was a game that's relevant to the Big Ten, the rivalry game between Iowa and Iowa State. Iowa State was actually ranked 9th, while Iowa was 10th, and Iowa ended up winning 27-17 over their Big 12 rival.
Right. Yeah, and it was a tight game, and again, Iowa wins it with defense and opportunistic offense, right? Their offense wasn't prolific at all, but their defense put them in a position to get some easier points, and when they give the offense, you know, those short fields and such from turnovers, guess what the offense does? They find a way. They get it done, and then their defense is so darn good that basically Iowa State couldn't really do much anything.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Classic Iowa right there.
It is totally.
Yeah. And then looking ahead to next week, there are two really big games that will be interesting on the national stage. Alabama, Florida in the SEC, and then Auburn versus Penn State, SEC versus Big Ten matchup.
Yeah, I didn't know. I had forgotten about that Penn State Auburn game. That will be interesting, and very interested to see how Penn State handles that. Because even though they beat Wisconsin in week one, I feel like that was one of those games where Wisconsin kind of lost it.
Right.
And then this week they played, I think, a MAC school, and they won, but it wasn't super impressive. And so it'll be interesting to see what's going on there for Penn State. Is that at Auburn?
Let me look that up. I'm not sure.
Okay. Well, if you don't know, it's fine. We can keep going. But I would say that if that game is at Auburn, I would be concerned if I'm a Penn State fan. I mean, I know Auburn isn't maybe at its peak or anything. Auburn, is not struggling, but I mean, they're not at their peak.
No.
And so
it is at Penn State.
At Penn State. Okay. That's a big plus then. I think then the chances are far better that Penn State will find a way to make that successful.
Though that's exactly what we said about Ohio State last week, and look what happened there.
That's true. You're right. Yep. And if Penn State were to lose to Auburn, oh my gosh, combined with the Ohio State loss, then all of a sudden there's going to be a lot of the Big Ten is down kind of commentary.
A lot of more pressure than usual, I guess, than on Michigan to try to step back up to the plate in that scenario.
Yep, exactly.
But that Alabama-Florida game, of course, a matchup of Titans that we've gotten used to seeing over the years. I assume that you think Alabama is the favorite, but if you had to put a score on the game, what would you say?
Wow. Alabama is still bringing along some youth. They're extremely talented, but they're bringing along some youth. And Florida should be kind of really getting into their groove now, because their coach has been there, same as Scott Frost, and has had a lot more success than Scott. So he's established himself a much, much better. But I'm still going to say Alabama will be successful and win that game. I'm going to say it's probably not going to be as high scoring maybe as I might have thought. I'm going to say it's going to be like, 31-28.
Alabama. Wow. Interesting. I did just look it up. It is at Florida. So Florida will have that home game advantage. But I'm going to go ahead and predict that I think Alabama, like in past years, that Nick Saban's going to have a really good team together, and that they're going to be competing for the national championship again this year. So I'm going to predict that Alabama wins, and I'm going to say that their defense comes here to play. And so Florida will get 21 points, while Alabama will get 38. 38-21 Alabama.
Okay. Wow. Yeah, you're probably that's probably a pretty darn good guess, Alex. I would say you're probably closer than me, but I maybe I'm just hoping because I'm so disgusted with the same old Alabama.
Yeah. And then our last discussion for today will, of course, be about Nebraska's upcoming game. Oklahoma played against West Carolina in the previous week, and they crushed them 76 to 0. So a little bit similar to Buffalo defeating their team like 69 to nothing last time. But of course, Oklahoma's not Buffalo. They're a much bigger threat. So, as you pointed out earlier, I am definitely very concerned about the offensive line going up against Oklahoma's defense, that Martinez could find himself running away the whole game. We've seen that in the past, and these are the sorts of games where he tweaks something and then he's hurt, and he's not 100% for the rest of the season and it derails us. So I really hope we can avoid that situation. And then defensively, I think definitely more highly of our defense than I do our offense, but we have still gotten beaten on a number of occasions. And in the past, as we've talked about on this podcast, where we've played zone because we're too scared to do man-to-man against receivers, typically teams have found ways to get those, medium passes, the 10, 15 yard passes on us pretty consistently, and then you just march down the field and score the honest way. So it's going to be rough for us. I'd like to think that we can hang in there in the first half, and then, they kind of pull away, blow the doors off us maybe in the second half, but at least we make one half convincing. But that is definitely not a guarantee. What is your feelings on that?
I would agree with you on your overall assessment. I think our challenge is along the offensive and defensive line. They are going to be coming at us, and again, this is where I think the weakness in how we prepare, the weakness in our practice philosophy and approach, comes back to haunt us in games like this, where we're going to look like we're running in quicksand, while they're gazelles that are running, full speed. And my fear is that things could unwind rather rapidly. We would need for them to do us a favor or two. We would need them to have a turnover, to make some mistakes, and maybe be a little overconfident so they're not at their peak in terms of intensity. But I guarantee you that won't be the case. I think that they're not going to be overlooking us or anything like that. And they're going to come into that game wanting to make a statement because they did not play well in their first week's game. And so this is their first chance on national TV to make a statement, and Oklahoma is going to do that. So I'm afraid that Nebraska's only choice here is to match that intensity and that physicality. And our defense, I think, is good enough to maybe be able to slow them down, like you say, for a little bit, especially if we came up with a scheme that really matched up well for them. Their quarterback is a Heisman front runner, but I also think he's a guy that in the past has had a tendency to maybe, lose his focus for a period of a game, right? So you throw an interception, maybe make some bad decisions, whatever. And it would sure be great if he did that, especially early in the game, so that would allow us to maybe get a cheap touchdown or something, and kind of hang around. But I agree. By the second half, I don't think this is going to be very close. And my concern is that our guys are going to give up. I sense there's an overall kind of level of frustration among our team, guys that are pretty close to just kind of throwing their hands up and saying screw this, because they're getting an awful lot of negative commentary from Nebraska fans who, even though we've won two games, still look at the way in which we won those games and say we should have dominated those two teams and we were fighting for our lives in both games in many respects. So I just don't, I don't think we can match up with these guys. I mean, we would need them to really, really screw up. So I don't want it to be, a 55-3 kind of game, but I would say that's more likely than us being in a tight, 21-17 kind of game.
Oh, yeah. Well, I definitely agree that that's the more likely scenario. I will say in both the Scott Frost and in the Mike Riley era, we did show the ability to pull off upsets against teams that were considered to be better than us. Frankly, it's us playing the teams that are considered worse than us, where it feels like, we have that expectation, right, that we're supposed to be the better team and we make stupid mistakes that let them stay in it. In this case, though, the pressure is off. We're playing at Oklahoma. Nobody is going to be choosing us to win this game nationally. So if they do make a mistake, and somehow the kind of the tension gets to Oklahoma, then we're the ones who have nothing to lose and can kind of play freely. So that's kind of the one scenario where I can see us making it close and maybe out a surprise.
And if Shenander can get the defense ready to play this offense, okay, and all the diversity that Lincoln Riley has in his offensive repertoire, then that would go a long way. And then maybe you have, a breakdown in their defense and Adrian is able to take advantage of it and either make a great run or a great pass like he's done in recent weeks. And that would be awesome, but here's the thing. We talked about it at the beginning of our podcast today, other than Toure, right? Mm-hmm. We've got Omar Manning out. We've got Betts out. We got Austin Allen out and Vokalek.
And Hickman.
So we're now down to our and potentially Hickman. So there's we're down to our third or fourth tight end. We have not established any continuity with our run game. We've had a revolving door at running back, and our offensive line is still in shambles. So what do we have that we can lean on? Again, much like Michigan, who's been able to establish for themselves, an identity in these couple of games they've played, here we are three games in, and we aren't any closer to establishing an identity than we were in the preseason.
Mm-hmm. That's true. That is true. And of course, the injury bug always seems to strike us badly, but, that's just one you kind of got to roll with, and the fact that we don't have as much depth as a lot of these teams that are better than us. One thing, before we give our score predictions, setting aside the, win, loss, on the field stuff, how do you feel as a longtime Nebraska fan getting to play Oklahoma again, this classic rivalry game? It's been about a decade since we played them last. So how does that feel for you?
Well, if I felt like we were able to bring a reasonably competitive a team to the game, not even necessarily one where we were expected to win, but just one in which we weren't, 20 plus point underdogs, I would be way more excited about the renewal of this rivalry. Cause it really was awesome growing up, in the 70s and 80s. There was so much respect that built between those two schools. And so the other games were lesser games in the season, because you knew when you played against Oklahoma, man, they were going to give you, their best shot. And it was going to be an all-out battle, And that intensity made that game really cool. And then the relationships that kind of slowly built out of that between Tom Osborne and Barry Switzer was incredible, really, that those two guys, because they couldn't have been more opposites as in terms of personality and how they went about doing their job, but both of them were remarkable at it, right? So it was just so cool to be a part of that. I don't feel that at all as I approach this week. It's much more of a thing of, gee, I just wish we could be a more credible opponent for them. Then that would be more fun for them too, frankly, and give them more of a boost when they beat us. Now they're in the, like you said, we're the ones that come in free and clear, right? Everybody's expecting us to get our ass kicked. So it is what it is. And if we don't, and we play respectfully, we can look at that as a positive, even though we lose by 14 points, let's say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. In terms of predictions, I'm going to go ahead and say that Oklahoma does win. They definitely do beat us, and they are able to score a lot of points on us. But that I'm going to hope that we are able to, you know, like you say, kind of find some of that identity that we need on offense, and are able to keep, like I say, I would predict we keep it close in the first half, and the second half they kind of blow away from us, you know, and it's not really close by the fourth quarter, but we've kept it respectable at least. So I'm going to predict that Oklahoma wins 42-21 over Nebraska.
Wow, that, okay, see, now that would be a score that I wouldn't be happy with, but I could probably accept. Again, I'm going to be more on the pessimistic side in this week because, you know, as a side note, there are some longtime contributors and, you know, guys that participate in some of the websites that I frequent that, you know, talk about Nebraska football, who have really thrown in the towel this week. Even on the heels of this quote-unquote victory against Buffalo, they have finally conceded that they don't believe Scott Frost is getting it done coaching-wise, that he is officially in over his head in their minds. And these are people that I respect because I've generally agreed with their reasonably heady and objective view of, you know, the program and where we might be able to improve, but with an obvious homer bent, you know, in hopes that we were going to turn that corner. They're now conceding they don't think we're going to turn the corner, that Scott isn't the guy, and they've kind of lost hope. And that's a bad sign for me. So my prediction is that we're going to see some of that lost hope show up in this game. And if things don't go well for us early, which often is the case, even when we're playing lesser teams, then this could get ugly. And hopefully Oklahoma will call off the dogs, but I have a feeling that they're going to want to hang at least half a hundred on us. So I'm going to say it's going to be 55-17.
Okay. Both definitely could happen. We will have to see.
Yeah. I of course hope that we can do like you said and stay close, have a couple of good things happen early, maybe put a little bit of a doubt or fear in them because we're able to, say, establish a running game, which they will be watching three films showing that we can't run the football. And so if all of a sudden we're able to against them, that might freak them out a little bit, right? And all of a sudden then wide receivers are open and we're a balanced offense and Scott Frost's offense starts working. You know, that would be the scenario that's great. And then our mature defense, it at least slows them down and we are able to score, match scores and, you know, play with them. And we end up in a battle that ends up with a victor that wins by, you know, 45-42 or something like that.
Yep, that would be nice for sure, for sure. That's what we're all hoping for here in Husker Nation. So as I said at the beginning of the podcast, next week's podcast will be a little delayed. We may combine two podcasts together. We'll see, but we'll definitely be back to talk about the Oklahoma game and the other big games coming up in this week of college football. We hope all you out there enjoyed listening to us. If you did, you can find us on Apple Podcasts. If you search for College Football Throwdown, you can leave us a rating or a review there. Let us know what you think of the podcast. You can also find us on SoundCloud if you prefer listening on that website. So thank you all out there for listening. And thank you for joining me for this episode, Dad. Until next time, go Big Red.
Go Big Red.